for schools, educators, students and educational developments. Dublin City FM.
Hello and welcome. This is Inside Education. My name is Sean Delaney. On this week's programme, I bring you an interview with Professor Constance Cammie, who is widely known throughout the world for her research on how young children learn mathematics. Constance Cammie was born in Geneva, Switzerland, and attended primary school there and in Japan. She finished high school in Los Angeles and received a PhD in education and psychology from the University of Michigan. She is now a professor of early childhood education at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. In the 1960s and 1970s, she studied under the psychologist Jean Piaget in Switzerland. I recorded an interview with Constance Cammie back in April 2002, which I'm going to bring to you this evening. In the interview, Constance Cammie spoke about her experience of learning mathematics, the work of Jean Piaget, and the harmful effects of telling children how to add, subtract, multiply, and divide when most children can invent their own ways of doing such calculations. I began by asking Constance to tell me about her earliest memory of herself as a young girl learning in school.
My early memory of schooling was that I was a very obedient child, and I remember school as a place where I had to obey and obey and obey. So it was a scary place for me.
And was it difficult for you to have to obey all the time?
Yes, it was. Well, yes and no. I was such an obedient child that it was easy, except at times I had my own idea. And I still remember that when there was a problem like 22 minus 15, I subtracted 2 from 5. And teachers know this phenomenon very well. And I thought that was perfectly all right, and the teacher said, no, I couldn't do it. And she explained it to me, and when I was finished with that explanation, I still thought I was right. And so the teacher insisted, and I figured, well, I had to obey. But I still thought that I should subtract 2 from 5. Under those circumstances. And so the teacher said no. And I finally gave in. But those were the times when I thought this obedience bit was more than I could tolerate. But I did tolerate it.
And at what stage did you begin to like mathematics when you were at school yourself? Or did you ever reach that stage?
I never did. I avoided math. I could memorize rules and somehow apply these rules for a long time. And I think I got as far as Algebra 1, but when I did not have to take math anymore, I just avoided it. So
when then did your interest in mathematics education begin?
Well, I used to be in preschool education, and parents kept saying that this Piagetian way of teaching children should continue into elementary school. And I looked around, and there were many people in reading, but I couldn't find anybody in elementary arithmetic, and that's how I got into elementary arithmetic.
You mentioned there a Piagetian approach, which is, of course, after the psychologist Jean Piaget. When did you first become aware of Piaget's work?
Well, as I said, I was in preschool education, and my first problem was to figure out what kinds of goals and objectives would be good for preschool education? And this, I must say, was for the lower class, disadvantaged, low ability children who are failures from the beginning of public schooling. And so to prevent this early failure, I was in preschool education to figure out what could be done for them. And so the conceptualization of goals and objectives for these children was a very important part. And I studied every theory and every method, like the Montessori method, and that I could find to figure out what would be a good set of objectives in preschool education so that it would benefit the child at age 10, 15, and into all the way into adulthood. And to this day, there is no other theory that describes children's development from birth all the way to adolescence. There is none. And so that's how I didn't know what I was getting into, but I knew that that was the only scientific research-based theory that showed the line of development.
Now, Constance, teachers who are listening to this program will know about the work of Piaget, but for other listeners, I wonder, could you say briefly about what he discovered about how children learn?
What he discovered was that children construct or create their own knowledge. So, and they don't wait to go to school and be fed knowledge. And for example, he asked children, well, what does the sun do after it goes down? And children said, well, it goes to bed. Or it goes around and comes back up, and then it takes turns with the moon. It's the moon that comes up, and well, what does the moon do when you look at it? Well, it follows me when I go on a walk. And so children have their own ideas and interpretations of the at their environment. And so it's in that sense that Piaget came up with this theory that children don't just record information that's given to them, they create their own interpretations of what they see.
And up until Piaget expounded his theories, people would have thought that children only learned what they were told by someone else. Is that right?
Yeah, and even teachers today, most teachers think that children will be empty-headed unless they are taught how to do add and subtract and how to read, how to do things. And usually adults are surprised that children have their own theories.
Piaget has been criticized by certain people. For example, Margaret Donaldson wrote a book saying that the language that he used when he was working with children wasn't child-friendly language. What is your view of criticisms that have been made of his work?
Well, he comes from a very different epistemological tradition, and that's why people like Margaret Donaldson are empiricists, and that is a theory of knowledge according to which knowledge comes from sensory information. But Piaget comes from another tradition that says we don't just see things with our eyes. And for example, what shall we say? Well, if we take the example of chopsticks, well, if you know chopsticks and you have seen it, you see those chopsticks as instruments for eating, But if you don't know it, you look at the same object, and the same object just doesn't have the same meaning. So you don't, that's an example that shows that you don't get knowledge just with your eyes, you get it with your thinking. And so if you don't know that kind of basic difference about Piaget's theory, well, you one thinks that if you just change the language a little bit, or if you just make the task a little bit easier, you will find children looking much more logical and much more intelligent. And it is true that if you feed half of the answer to a child, you will get a better, more advanced knowledge, I mean, answer. But from my point of view, that's just not understanding Piaget's intention or his background or the depth of his knowledge. And there are many superficial psychologists who just look at only the surface of facts that he unearthed and disagreed with him.
So you're saying he went behind what children actually think and thought about how their thinking changes when they see something new, is that right?
Yeah, well, for example, if children say that the moon follows me when I go for a walk, well, just think about it. And it's not hard for me to imagine how a child gets that kind of idea. And it sounds wild, but, and then some children would say things like when Piaget asked, "When, if the moon follows you, what about the people in France?" Well, children would say, well, they have another moon. Well, it's not all that wild that to hear children's thoughts like that. And what's behind that should be the psychologist's attitude. But then it's easy to just put that down as wild something.
And you, of course, had the opportunity to study with Piaget. How did that opportunity come about for you?
Oh, as I said earlier, I studied every theory that I could, and I found nothing else that seemed promising to me. And I was still trying to figure out goals and objectives for preschool education, and it was not obvious to me immediately. In fact, it took me more than 10 years to figure that out. But because he had this developmental perspective, I decided to go to Geneva. And I was born in Geneva, Switzerland, and so his books are very hard to read. And but I caught his last lecture, and as a person speaking, he was somebody very different from the writer, Piaget the writer. And I could understand him, and I decided to go study under him. And 1 year I thought was enough, and that certainly was not enough, and that turned to be 2 years and 3 years and 4 years, and I ended up on and off studying under him for 15 years. And the only reason I stopped going was that he died.
That was in 1980, I think.
Yes.
And what was he like to study for?
Well, he was rather formal and unapproachable and very demanding. When I finally became a research fellow and did research for him, it was a scary thing because he was demanding. But it was worth it.
I can imagine.
On 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Constance, you, in your own research, you have become synonymous with advocating children's inventing their own algorithms in learning mathematics. I wonder, can you explain, first of all, for listeners, what exactly an algorithm is?
Sure. An algorithm is a social conventional rule that tells you exactly how to calculate. For example, an example of an algorithm is the rule of carrying and the one about borrowing. And don't talk to me about long division. I mean, that's a killer. And I assume that in your country, you don't find a fourth grader who can explain why he or she does the long division thing. But there is a rule that says divide and multiply and bring down, subtract and something or other. And it's just a bunch of rules that kids do not usually understand. So that's an algorithm.
Okay, and what you're saying is that children can actually invent their own yes. ways of doing these. How do they do that?
Well, for example, if you have 12 plus 12 and you don't tell them how to do it, they typically start with 10 and 10 is 20. And then they take care of the little details like the ones, 2 and 2 is 4, then I put them together and the answer is 24. In other words, their invention is the opposite of the rules that schools give them, like you have to start with the ones and add 2 and 2 first, and then you do 10 and 10. So.
And how would they apply that, say, with more complex algorithms like, say, the division one or the long multiplication?
Division is what they do is, well, for example, if it's 400 divided by 5, say, then they might try to figure what they already know. So they might say, I know 100. I could put how many 5s are there in 100. And then they, whatever it is, they just do four times whatever it is. So they approach long division. In other words, it's not just long division, but they invent by using what they already know. So if it's 400, they think, what do I know about 400 divided by 5? So that I can invent something new. And then after that, they begin to invent shortcuts and become more efficient.
And of its nature, if they're allowed to invent their own algorithms or their own ways of doing these mathematical operations, some of them will invent different methods, yeah. and some might not invent any.
If they don't invent any, that's because they have not reached the level of logical arithmetical thinking to invent. But don't worry, everybody can invent. And in a classroom, especially if they are listening to other kids' inventions, many of them think, oh yeah, that's a clever way to do it, and they start imitating.
Parents or teachers who are listening to this, Constance, might say, okay, maybe children will invent their own algorithms, but it's going to take time. Isn't it much more efficient for a teacher to show them the way to do it and cut out all the time that would go into inventing algorithms?
Okay, now we come to some other research I have done, and that is about the harmful effects of teaching, carrying, and borrowing. And in the name of education, it's really scandalous how we harm children by teaching rules such as carrying and borrowing, because of two main reasons. Number one, as I told you, schools tell you to start with the ones, and their children's way is to start with the tens. And so in order to obey teachers' ways of starting with the ones, children have to give up their own thinking. And that in itself, frankly, is criminal. I mean, it is immoral, as far as I'm concerned, to tell children essentially that you have to give up your own thinking and do things my way, because I decree that you have to start with the ones. Okay, that's the first thing. And the second harm is that children unlearn place value, that is, the knowledge that in 12, the 1 in 12 means 10 and not 1. But if they are taught the algorithm, then they say, if you can picture 12 plus 12, they go 2 plus 2 is 4, 1 plus 1 is 2. And that's how they talk, even. Just listen to children. And then after they get those numbers written, then they read the result as if it were one number. But it's this business of saying 1 plus 1 instead of 10 plus 10. And children really think that's 1 plus 1. And they already have that weakness of thinking that that's 1 plus 1 and not 10 plus 10. And so, especially when you get to the hundreds also, the carrying and borrowing rules make children forget about the tens and hundreds. And they treat, for adults, these carrying and borrowing rules are useful because we already know that the 1 and 1 in 12 and 12 are tens. Well, children don't.
Is this because when we teach, or when teachers teach children how to, say, subtract using borrowing and paying back or using decomposition, that they get children to focus on parts of the number rather than on the number as a whole?
Yes, parts, and also every column gets treated as ones. And so that's useful for adults who already know that that's 100 and that's 1,000 and so forth. But children, that's why it's harmful to children who already think that one is a one, no matter where, which column it is in.
And I suppose one of the concerns that some people would have in listening to what you're saying is, okay, that might be okay for children, you know, for average children in the class or for children who are doing well, but how do children who struggle with mathematics, how do they respond to being asked to invent their own algorithms?
Well, logical mathematical knowledge is such that when they can invent, they can invent. It's the same thing for all children. And in fact, the children who are harmed the most by carrying and borrowing are the low-level, low-ability children. So they are harmed more than, well, the really bright kids who understand that the 1 in 12 is a 10. And if in second grade, certain children, like 20% of the children, are not harmed because they understand that that's a 10 and not a 1. But the lower the child's level is, the more they are harmed by the rules.
And supposing a teacher was listening to this, maybe a second class teacher in a school, I'm not sure if you know the Irish system, the children begin, say, for at junior infants, senior infants, then first class, right up to sixth class. But supposing a teacher in second class wanted to try out your approach, where the children are encouraged to invent their own algorithms, can he or she do that on their own, or does there need to be a consistent approach among teachers in the school?
In second grade, children are inventing their ways for the first time. So second grade is not so, hopeless when you already have had traditional algorithmic teaching. But by third grade, the teacher has to make heroic efforts And I won't say it's hopeless, but it takes a long, long time to get children to do their own honest thinking, because they just hang on to the easy rules. Even if it's not understandable, they hang on to that old rule.
They're afraid to let go of the crutch.
Yes, yes. So, in other words, if the school is not consistent, then it makes it hard for teachers to get children to do their own thinking.
Now, we've spoken a lot about the work that you've done, obviously, on inventing algorithms, but you're involved in other research as well. I wonder, would you say a little bit about what research you're involved in at the moment?
Right now, I am doing things about the formula for getting the area of a rectangle and length times width. In the United States, that is taught in fourth grade, but fourth graders don't understand it, and the national assessment has shown for years and years that even in seventh grade, only half of the children can use that on a test. And so I'm doing research in finding out why it is that is so hard for children. And again, I went to Piaget's theory because he has an explanation, and he is the only one who has an explanation, and I'm following it up now.
And your work, your job is as a professor of mathematics in education, professor of mathematics education in Alabama, isn't that right?
No, I'm a professor of early childhood education.
I beg your pardon. Yes, sir. And what do you most enjoy about your work?
I think it is research, and also teaching, talking about that research, the findings, to teachers or future teachers. Well, I teach only at the graduate level, so my students are teachers. And as far as the results are concerned, there are those whom I don't influence, but there are those whose lives I have changed, and they become constructivist teachers, and they just get completely away from traditional teaching.
That must be very gratifying.
Yes, it is. It is.
Constance Kami, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Oh, you're very welcome. It has been a pleasure.
And that was Professor Constance Kami, who I spoke to back in 2002. But her ideas today, from then, are as relevant today as they were then. That's all we have time for on Inside Education this week. Podcasts of previous programmes are available on the programme's website. That is www.insideed.com. That is insideed, all one word, .com. If you want to comment on a programme or make a suggestion, you can text me on 086 8962 665. That text number again is 086 8962 665. You can also get in touch by email. That address is insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. The email address again is insideeducation, all one word, @dublincityfm.ie. I'll be back with you at the same time next week. Until then, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.